Thank you very much, Greg. It is interesting and challenging to hear how another nation, we heard from Sweden this morning, New Zealand this afternoon now, how they are grappling and dealing with some of the social issues that they are facing and we in turn are facing in similar or sometimes dissimilar ways as well. It's a challenge to us and it's very interesting to hear how you face some of those issues right now. The microphone is open. We do have a few minutes for questions here, and I would encourage people to take the microphone and we'll hear from Greg as well.
Or we can get after into yearly. I said so much.
I know you said it all. I have one question for you while people are thinking of their questions, and that is, we've heard some of these stories as being negative, downside. What are some of the upside stories that you can point to at this particular time? What are some of the positive things going on within the structure of family?
I do see, as I said there in my closing comments, I do see signs of hope. The trends in terms of rates of marriage, for example, are beginning to stall. I was interested who was it that spoke this morning? Who showed the tapering off of marriage, pointing out that there is a ceiling at which things do seem to taper off. And I think New Zealand has probably hit those. I think in many of our social statistics, we're probably ahead of the curve. But I think I can report some good news of saying that the curve does taper. That has been perhaps our experience. As I say, I think for me the biggest hope is the role of leadership and the attitude now being taken by our native people. And probably the biggest hope for me is this fact that you now see it in the next generation that are coming through, and the people in their late teens and the early 20s, that they are pausing to say, hey, this story that we've been following doesn't look like it ends well, and we actually need to find another narrative. But that is the challenge for us, I think, is to propose this alternative narrative for them, perhaps even more importantly than it is to show them the correct graph or data set.
So how is the anti-smacking law actually functioning now in New Zealand? How many cases do you know about when the police could have laid charges but refrained?
Yep.
And in how many cases have they actually laid charges? And if the numbers are known, and what is the attitude of the population?
Firstly, in terms of the numbers, there's been around about 300 cases, I think, at the last count that the police have investigated. To my understanding, I think fewer than 30 of those have actually gone to court. There have been the first successful prosecutions over the last 12 to 18 months. I think, to mind, about six parents so far have actually been convicted and sentenced on those cases. Most of those cases, a couple of them are pretty clear cut, that weren't good, but they would have been caught under the previous law anyway. But the other cases are very much in dispute, and in fact advocacy on them continues around, basically saying that the courts were far too advocacy based in pursuing the judgment that they returned. The biggest impact on New Zealand so far seems to be, as indicated by the statistics, is either the loss in confidence or the loss in clarity of parents towards what authority they now have over their children. So far we haven't seen the police running completely amok.
I was wondering, what would you recommend for parents in face of the spanking law? How do they deal with that? How should they best deal with it? And I believe the Bible has something about spanking, not using a stick bigger than your finger or something like that. Now, how does the Christian parent deal with the law like that?
We
need guidelines.
Sure, yeah. My answer here may well vary for a number of people in this room. I'm actually reasonably ambivalent about whether parents are able to spank their children, and I say that in two regards. So my reading of that particular scripture is that it can just as, if not even more accurately, be translated as meaning a guiding rod rather than an implement for striking. My concern is not so much that parents retain the right to be able to, as a, for for want of a common term, to strike the children. My observation in running a parenting organisation for a number of years before we started Maxim Institute is that there are plenty of other methods of discipline available to parents. But rather that nearly all of those methods still require the parent to have physical authority over their child. And the exercise of any one of those elements of authority under New Zealand law now would qualify as an assault against which there is now no defence in a court of law. An answer to your primary question is what do I now say to people? I say take comfort in the fact that you are one of the 85% of parents who still think that you should have physical authority over your children, and rest assured in the case that there simply aren't enough law enforcement officers in this country to radically enforce that law if they choose so. So that our present Prime Minister, is a fundamentally decent and good man, and I have no doubt that he believed that he was doing the best thing. He was wanting to balance a very contentious and heated debate with the genuine concerns of some people that smacking and abuse were interchangeable and indistinguishable, but at the same time realising what the vast majority of parents wanted, which was protection from the law. He genuinely believed that what he proposed was getting that balance right. With the greatest respect to him, I think he was naive, I think he was incorrect, and I think that even the few cases we've had to date have indicated that fact. So my advice to parents is carry on with what you're doing and trust in the fact that probably in the foreseeable future we will see the law amended so that it's not making such an ass of itself. Thank you.
I have a sort of a supplementary question. So the police now are in a position to lay charges, but are not supposed or are allowed not to do that if it is not in public interest.
That's correct.
So question number one, is that not a power that actually belongs to the Parliament? Public interest? And B, how do they define the public interest when they deliberate?
Answer to the first one is yes, and second one is they've handed it to the courts, and the courts now have to decide on the merits of each case as to how they're going to rule, but primarily that power is now exercised by the police. So it's you've now got this policeman who has no such education and usually no such very little life experience to be able to make that sort of judgment, and yet it is they that are deciding whether the charges will be brought. And this is the key point. The harrowing process for the parent begins at the moment that they are arrested, whether they are actually prosecuted or not. And this is of dozens of the 300 cases that have been brought so far. The parents have reported back and said it was the case itself that was completely harrowing. It was almost like by the time they got to the point of whether they were going to be convicted or not, it was almost beside the point. By then, the family had already been disrupted, and the mental and emotional anguish that they had gone through. So it's a very, very poor piece of lawmaking. And interestingly, most legal authorities in New Zealand advised against it as well. It really was a nothing more than a political move. But as we heard from Jonas today, political ideology runs strong in many Western countries.
Has anybody suggested that this is an anti-democratic precedent? Actually,
very much so. Frequently, particularly, you can imagine the heat and the emotion that was around after the referendum result was announced. And yet, as I say, literally within hours, it was slapped down. If I can use that term. I think slapping's still allowed. Slapping and whipping, not spanking.
Greg, I think you mentioned in 20 years New Zealand will be different, right? You're hoping so. What are the forces of change that are going to make it different? You argued the First Nations there, mm-hmm. young people, parents who actually don't believe in a law like that. Mm-hmm. What other forces of change are going to be required to make that change?
Uh-huh. Intentional, strategic, determined planning, fostering the ideas and leadership for a more free, just and compassionate New Zealand. We are a small country. We have only 4 million people, and as I said in my introduction, changes happen very quickly. For the last 10 to 15 years, those changes have all too often been in a negative direction. I believe that with the right people committed together, for the long term, sharing those ideas, poring over them, critiquing their own assumptions, and committed to that common cause, we can see the change about. And now I sound like I'm doing a promotional course for Maxim Institute. But that's what we're doing. And so please, if you come down to New Zealand, come and visit us, and we'll show you firsthand some of the work we're doing.
Last question.
Oh, okay. I had mentioned before, I'm not sure if you heard, so I'm a pediatrician that works, yes, in Ottawa. And so I think, and I also work in global health. And so for 21 years ago when the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child was proposed, and many, many countries are signatories, I think its original purpose was really to protect children, you know, in developing countries and situations of war and that. And then you alluded, I was very interested in the quote from the book, how that's being twisted, right? So that instead of, you know, protecting children, that their basic fundamental rights like shelter and food and that sort of thing are being threatened, it's augmented. And I think it can be pervasive at the UN and in UNICEF too. You alluded to downstream from the smacking law, changing the age of consent, mm-hmm, for sexual activity, and one other thing.
Lowering the age of voting.
Right. So did that go through, or can you expand on that a bit?
They both fell by the wayside, okay, thankfully. Yeah.
By the same groups of people, or
they were promoted by the same political forces that successfully promoted the two pieces of legislation I highlight today. Yes, they did, and I don't think that sort of drive will go away. But for now, the real impetus behind that has waned. We do have different political forces at play in New Zealand now, but certainly the United Nations Declaration on the Child continues to hold particular sway in our public sector in New Zealand. And yeah, as you say, it is unfortunately being twisted, because most of that document is very admirable, and certainly its intentions were wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Will you please join me in thanking Greg Fleming one more time?